whimsically arises different from every known blossom, the one absent from all bouquets, ideal itself and delicate. In the authentic language, the world, je ne pas l'expression d'une jouse, mais l'absence de cette jouse, le monde fait disparaître le jouse et nous imposer le sentiment d'une mange universelle et même de son propre mange. Footnote 1, text. It is not the expression of a thing, but rather the absence of this thing. The world makes the thing disappear and imposes upon us the feeling of a universal want and even of its own want. Poetry is thus the power of de nier les jouses, to deny the things, the power which Hegel claims paradoxically for all authentic thought. Valerie asserts, le penser est aux hommes le travail qui fait vivre et nous ce qui n'existe pas. Footnote 2, text. In short, thought is the labor which brings to life in us that which does not exist. He asks the rhetorical question, que sommes-nous donc sans le secours de ce qui n'existe pas? Footnote 3. What are we without the help of that which does not exist? Page 449. This is not existentialism. It is something more vital and more desperate, the effort to contradict a reality in which all logic and all speech are false to the extent that they are part of a mutilated whole. The vocabulary and grammar of the language of contradiction are still those of the game. There are no others, but the concepts codified in the language of the games are redefined by relating them to their determinate negation. This term, which denotes the governing principle of dialectical thought, can be explained only in a textual interpretation of Hegel's logic. Here it must suffice to emphasize that by virtue of this principle, the dialectical contradiction is distinguished from all pseudo and crackpot oppositions, beatnik and hipsterism. The negation is determinate if it refers the established state of affairs to the basic factors and forces which make for its destructiveness, as well as for the possible alternatives beyond the status quo. In the human reality, they are historical factors and forces, and the determinate negation is ultimately a political negation. As such, it may well find authentic expression in non-political language, and the more so as the entire dimension of politics becomes an integral part of the status quo. Dialectical logic is critical logic. It reveals modes and contents of thought which transcends the codified pattern of use and validation. Dialectical thought does not invent these contents. They have accrued to the notion in the long traditions of thought and action. Dialectical analysis merely assembles and reactivates them. It recovers tabooed meanings and thus appears almost as a return, or rather a conscious liberation of the repressed. Since the established universe of discourse is that of an unfree world, dialectical thought is necessarily destructive, and whatever liberation it may bring is a liberation in thought, in theory. However, the divorce of thought from action, of theory from practice, is itself part of the unfree world. No thought and no theory can undo it, but theory may help to prepare the ground for their possible reunion, and the ability of thought to develop a logic and language of contradiction is a prerequisite for this task. In what, then, lies the power of negative thinking? Dialectical thought has not hindered Hegel from developing his philosophy into a neat and comprehensive system, which in the end accentuates the positive emphatically. I believe it is the idea of reason itself which is the undialectical element in Hegel's philosophy. This idea of reason comprehends everything and ultimately absolves everything because it has its place and function in the whole, and the whole is beyond good and evil, truth and falsehood. Page 450. It may even be justifiable, logically as well as historically, to define reason in terms which include slavery, the Inquisition, child labor, concentration camps, gas chambers, and nuclear preparedness. These may well have been integral parts of that rationality which has governed the recorded history of mankind. If so, the idea of reason itself is at stake. It reveals itself as a part rather than as the whole. This does not mean that reason abdicates its claim to confront reality with the truth about reality. On the contrary, when Marxian theory takes shape as a critique of Hegel's philosophy, it does so in the name of reason. It is consonant with the innermost effort of Hegel's thought if his own philosophy is cancelled, not by substituting for reason some extra rational standards, but by driving reason itself to recognize the extent to which it is still unreasonable, blind, the victim of unmastered forces. Reason as the developing and applied knowledge of a man as free thought was instrumental in creating the world we live in. It was also instrumental in sustaining injustice, toil, and suffering. But reason and reason alone contains its own corrective. In the Logik, which forms the first part of his system of philosophy, Hegel anticipates almost literally Wagner's Parsifal message. The hand that inflicts the wound is also the hand that heals it. Footnote 4, text. The context is the biblical story of the fall of man. Knowledge may have caused the wound in the existence of man, the crime and the guilt, but the second innocence, the second harmony, can be gained only from knowledge. Redemption can never be the work of a guileless fool. Against the various obscurantists who insist on the right of the irrational versus reason, on the truth of the natural versus the intellect, Hegel inseparably links progress in freedom to progress in thought, action to theory. Since they accepted the specific historical form of reason reached at his time as the reality of reason, the advance beyond this form of reason must be an advance of reason itself. And since the adjustment of reason to oppressive social institutions perpetuated unfreedom, progress in freedom depends on thought becoming political in the shape of a theory which demonstrates negation as a political alternative implicit in the historical situation. Marx's materialistic subversion of Hegel, therefore, was not a shift from a philosophical position to another, nor from philosophy to social theory, but rather a recognition that the established forms of life were reaching the stage of their historical negation. The historical stage has changed the situation of philosophy and of all cognitive thoughts. Page 451. From this stage on, all thinking that does not testify to an awareness of the radical falsity of the established forms of life is faulty thinking. Abstraction from this all-pervasive condition is not merely immoral, it is false. For reality has become technological reality, and the subject is now joined with the object so closely that the notion of the object necessarily includes the subject. Abstraction from their interrelation no longer leads to a more genuine reality, but to deception, because even in this sphere The subject itself is apparently a constitutive part of the object as scientifically determined. The observing, measuring, calculating subject of scientific method and the subject of the daily business of life both are expressions of the same subjectivity, man. One did not have to wait for Hiroshima in order to have one's eye opened to this identity. And as always before, the subject that has conquered matter suffers under the dead weight of this conquest. Those who enforce and direct this conquest have used it to create a world in which the increasing comforts of life and the ubiquitous power of the productive apparatus keeps men enslaved to the prevailing state of affairs. Those social groups with dialectical theory identified as the forces of negation are either defeated or reconciled with the established system. Before the power of the given facts, the power of negative thinking stands condemned. This power of fact is an oppressive power. It is the power of man over man appearing as objective and rational conditions. Against this appearance, thought continues to protest in the name of truth and in the name of fact, for it is the supreme and the universal fact that the status quo perpetuates itself through the constant threat of atomic destruction, through the unprecedented waste of resources, through mental impoverishment, and last but not least, through brute force. These are the unresolved contradiction. They refine every single fact and every single event. They permeate the entire universe of discourse and action. Thus, they define also the logic of things, that is, the mode of thought capable of piercing the ideology and of comprehending reality whole. No method can claim a monopoly of cognition, but no method seems authentic which does not recognize that these two propositions are meaningful descriptions of our situation. The whole is the truth and the whole is false.